Just going to run this dog to see if we can find any type of human remains that are left.
Listen to Where Secrets Go to Die, The Disappearance of Derek Hennigan. From the Detroit Free Press, a new podcast set in the woods of Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Available on Apple, Spotify, Freep.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Under the Ring Pro Wrestling Conversations. My name is Phil Strum. So happy you're with me today. My guest is an icon of professional wrestling, sports entertainment, a Hall of Famer many times over in a number of different genres. It is Sergeant Slaughter. A&E biography Sergeant Slaughter is coming out this Sunday at 9 p.m. on A&E. And he's joining me today to talk about that and all of the things in his career, from wrestling the Iron Sheik in the boot camp match, wrestling Pat Patterson in the famous alley fight, being the living G.I. Joe, coming up with even the character of Sergeant Slaughter and what the inspirations for that were. Such a long, storied career from such an iconic guy. So here we go right now with my interview with Sergeant Slaughter. Honored to be joined by an icon of pro wrestling, a member of multiple halls of fame. It's Sergeant Slaughter. Sarge, welcome to Under the Ring Pro Wrestling Conversations. How are you doing today?
As you were, I'm doing great.
Thanks so much for being on here. So the big reason you're here, A&E biography, Sergeant Slaughter, airs this Sunday at 9 p.m. What's it mean to you to have an episode of that program dedicated to your life? And what do you think fans will enjoy about the final product?
Well, I'm really looking forward to seeing it. I haven't seen it myself yet. And unfortunately, I'm going to be in Europe when it does air on Sunday. But I'll be back on Monday night and I'll have it recorded so I can watch it. But, you know, you never know what you're going to end up with. We did hours and hours and hours of interviews for it, my family and myself, and I'm sure they've interviewed lots of other wrestlers and other people in my life. You never know what's going to make the reel, because it's only a two-hour show, and I had over a 50-year-plus career, so I'm sure it'll be fun for everybody to watch and be a part of.
How much pressure did you feel in wrestling trying to represent the U.S. military with your character? And was there any pressure or criticism that came along with portraying the U.S. military as the iconic character of Sergeant Slaughter?
Well, you know, whenever you're the villain, you get a lot of criticism. But I was always, 100%. Did a lot of research on it. A lot of my uncles served in the military. I asked them questions, and you know, it's something. It's like, you know, doing a background check when you're an actor on your characters that you portray. You know, I started out as some other characters, but then I found this character, Sergeant Slaughter, created it, and took it to heights that no one ever expected, including myself. And it's just an honor when you have people, at least a dozen people come through a line on a day and thank me and salute me and shake my hand and say, thank you. If it wasn't for you, I wouldn't have joined the military, but you were my motivation. You made me want to be a soldier. And all the men and women out there that did that, I salute them, and I appreciate what they did for our country and for the love of their country to serve.
It's interesting to you mentioned you were a number of different things before you were Sergeant Slaughter. I know you were a beautiful Bobby. I've seen that old promo shot of you with the cape or the robe or whatever it was. You were
long blonde hair. I had many outfits, but my favorite was the red, white, and blue. My mother made all those robes for me before she passed.
Wow.
And I wore them proudly, but it just wasn't my character wasn't the guy that I felt comfortable with in front of the camera. And I was still a very shy guy, but to get in front of that camera and that red light comes on, you have to go into a character. At least I did. I had to find a character that I could portray so that I could be in this profession. And Sergeant Slaughter was that character that I created. And anytime that I put my campaign cover on and tied up the laced up the combat boots, I went into character. And anytime I'm on a show like this, I'm in character. I'm in character right now. I'm Sergeant Slaughter right now. So Bob Remus, beautiful Bobby, just didn't work out for me. And I was under a mask for a few years at the request of some promoters. But Sergeant Slaughter was always my love and someone that I could go into and be very comfortable with.
What made you most comfortable about becoming, you mentioned, about Bob Remus becoming Sergeant Slaughter. What made you that character? Because it was a different time in wrestling, too. You basically became who you were.
Well, I think because it was just it was kind of more me. I always enjoyed going to bases, military bases with my uncles and getting on the tanks and riding around in all the vehicles. And it was a love that I really wanted. I really loved the military life. And I guess it just was in me somewhere. And when I turned on the TV one afternoon when my father and I were doing our roofing company and it rained and we couldn't work, I went in and I had retired from wrestling because my mother was sick and I was helping my father with his roofing company. And I turned on the TV and there in black and white, I heard the Marine Corps hymn, and I sat and watched a movie called The D.I., and it all happened. It was just like magical. It just everything happened for a reason, and I just said that's a character that I can portray. I could be a drill instructor, Sergeant Slaughter, and not only did it get to wrestling, but I became the first living G.I. Joe. From that character. A lot of people don't know that I'm the first living G.I. Joe and I'm the only person alive that has two Hall of Fame rings, one from G.I. Joe and of course one from the WWE. I'm the only man or person alive that has those two rings and is in a G.I. Joe and a WWE Hall of Fame. So it's gone further than inside the squared circle of wrestling. You know, I'm not only a professional wrestler and a world champion, but I'm the drill instructor for G.I. Joe, the real American hero. Yo, Joe!
Of course, when I was a kid, everybody knew Sergeant Slaughter from wrestling. They also knew you from G.I. Joe. How did that deal to become the living G.I. Joe come about, and how important was it for your career?
Well, I had come back from my second term of duty to the WWE, and Vince McMahon Sr. was still running the company. And he was so happy that I was there. He kept saying, "Sergeant, Sergeant, I'm so glad, so happy to have you back. You're the greatest villain of all time." And he kept patting me on the back and praising me. And I said, "Well, Mr. McMahon, if you think I'm such a great villain, you ought to see me as a hero." And he said, "A hero? Sergeant Slaughter is a hero? Wait a minute, what are you talking about? But what's your idea?" And so I told him, "Well, you know, you got the Iron Sheik from Iran here in the WWE. And here I am, United States Marines. And why don't you let Sergeant Slaughter go after the Iron Sheik, because we never really got any payback from what Ayatollah Khomeini did all those years. You know, we never got to punch him right in the nose for all the problems that he caused with the hostage situation and the killing of the Marines at the embassy and the Black Hawks going down. And I went through the whole scenario with him, and I think I kind of hypnotized him a little bit. And all of a sudden he snapped out of it, and he said, "Oh, whoa, that's really good, Sarge, but no, you can't you might be able to do that for a little while, but you'll ruin the character, Sergeant Slaughter, the villain." And I looked over at his shoulder at his son, who was standing behind him, who was taking over the company, and he gave me the thumbs up. He loved the idea. And Mr. McMahon Sr. turned around and he said, "Vinny, don't you ever turn Sergeant Slaughter into a hero. It won't work. It'll work for a while, but it won't work forever." And I hate to say it, but Mr. McMahon Sr. was wrong, because Vince McMahon, about 3 weeks later, came to me and said, "I want to do what you told my father." And I said, "Oh, go against the Iron Sheik?" He said, "Yes, I do." And I said, "When?" He said, "Right now." And I said, "Right now?" He goes, "Yeah, right now. Only you and I and the production truck is going to know that we're going to do this. I'm not telling anybody else. Element of surprise." He said, "You go out there and you challenge the Iron Sheik and use your best George Patton, General Patton promo." And so I had already taken all my gear off. So I'm lacing up my boots and trying to find my campaign cover, and it was nowhere to be found. But pretty soon my music was playing. I'm watching the monitor, and I see Iron Sheik and Ayatollah Blassie, Fred Blassie, his manager. I can read their lips, and they're saying, "Wrong music, wrong music." They're playing the wrong music, and out I came. And the place went crazy. And first, I don't think they were quite sure how to accept it, because here comes Sergeant Slaughter and the Marine Corps to the rescue of the United States. And the rest, as they say, is kind of history. And I guess Hasbro, where they were going in a different direction, they were always animated. They always had voiceovers. And they were looking for a ambassador, someone to be a real live character in their G.I. Joe cartoon series and their animated series. And got a hold of me through a couple other people, and we went and had a meeting with them. And they told me their ideas. So when I left, I told them, "Well, if you're looking for the real G.I. Joe, I'm the guy. And there's nobody else going to do it any better than me." And so by the time I got back home, my attorney told me they'd contacted him several times and said they wanted to sign me up. But then when I went to tell Vince McMahon about it, he said, "That's great, Sarge, but I can't let you do it." And I said, "Why not?" I said, "You had G.I. Joe and wrestling Sergeant Slaughter." And he said, "I just signed with LJN last week, and it'd be a conflict of interest to have Hasbro involved." So he said, "Thank you for going out of your way to try to do that." And I said, "Well, I think we can make it work." And he wouldn't make it work. So finally I had a decision. I had either stay in the WWE and continue on to do WrestleMania 1, or go on to Hasbro and be the first living G.I. Joe. And I was at the dinner table, and I was kind of quiet. My wife said, "What's your problem? You're not eating." And I said, "Well, I got this. I don't know what to do, go to Hasbro or stay with WWE. And she said, "Pretty simple. You can always be a wrestler. You can't always be the first living G.I. Joe." So I said, "Honey, that's why you get the big bucks." And I called Vince McMahon the next morning and gave him my notice, and it didn't go over so well, but that's how I ended up going to G.I. Joe. And I missed the first six WrestleManias, but number seven, there I was. an Iraqi sympathizer. Yeah. I think Vince McMahon was trying to get a little payback on me.
Still at the top of the card, so there's that. You're the WWF champion. But one thing that fascinated me when we lost Iron Sheik recently was the story that came out that he was working for your father's roofing company. What was your relationship like with Khosrow Vaziri, and how magical was the rivalry and the matches you created, especially the boot camp match that everybody remembers?
Well, I went to a training camp in Minnesota where I grew up, and Khosrow was in the group that was being trained with Rick Flair, who is Rick Flair today, and Capitera, Gagne, Jim Brunzel, Bob Bruggers, a few others, and Khosrow was part of that training camp. And so after the camp one day, I ran into him at a workout facility, and he started showing me some amateur wrestling and some moves that I wasn't familiar with. And so we got to be friends, and I had a little problem at the training camp with Billy Robinson, who was one of the trainers, along with Vern Gagne. And Billy and I had a little go-around, and Khosrow didn't like Billy very much. And he thought what Billy did was considered a cheap shot in our business. And he tried to break my ankle for me. And so Khosrow always kind of looked at me as kind of the guy that didn't take any crap from anybody, and I did what I had to do to basically survive. And so I'm not sure if it'll be in the biography or not, but I tell the story about how that happened and how I ended up being friends with Khosrow. And we ended up in Kansas City together a few times, and he wasn't the Iron Sheik yet, and I had just started as Sergeant Slaughter. So there was no, we were still friends. And in fact, I knew his wife very well. She was from Minnesota, Edina, Minnesota. And so one day he went off and became the Iron Sheik, and I went off and became more Sergeant Slaughter. And the time came where I thought it was time for someone to take him on. And but to go back a little bit, while he was kind of learning his trade in Minneapolis, he asked me if I would be able to hire him to work so he can make some money, because he wasn't making any money when he first started wrestling. So I asked my dad, and he said, bring him down. And we made him our kettleman that summer. And he worked for us for quite a few years. And he was part of Remus Roofing, and always remembered me for that. It was a special a bond that we had. But when we got in the ring, it was all business. And he came to me one time when he had the world championship. He had beaten Bob Backlund, and was very proud of that, and I was very proud of him. And one night, our afternoon in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, he came to my hotel room and knocked on the door, and he said, I have a problem. What's your problem, Khosrow? Coach, who was Vergagna, said, I give you $100,000 cash if you break Hulk Hogan's leg and bring title to Minneapolis, AWA. And I said, well, number one, don't be breaking anybody's leg, and tell Mr. McMahon Sr. exactly what you just told me when you get to Madison Square Garden on Monday. This was Friday. So on Monday, I saw him. I said, did you talk to Mr. McMahon? And he said, not yet. And I said, go talk to him immediately. So he went in and had a long meeting with him. And, of course, he ended up losing the title to Hulk Hogan and created Hulkamania right there. And but he did listen to me and listen to Mr. McMahon and did very well in the professional wrestling business.
Yeah,
he's a good man, good father, great husband.
And his A&E biography was also very good. I really, really enjoyed the what they did with him, too. The other big physical fight I think everybody remembers is the alley fight with Pat Patterson at Madison Square Garden. Getting in there that night with him, did you have any idea how good that match was going to be, how well remembered it was going to be? And my personal favorite part is when you see Vince McMahon Sr. just sort of strolling down the aisle down the to watch the finish of it. So, you know, what was the thought going into that? And did you have any idea it was going to have the legacy that did?
Well, you know, Pat and I were having all these matches, and pretty soon there was never any decision. So Mr. McMahon Sr. got a little fed up with it. He said, well, you two are going into a special match. And I said, what kind of match? And he said, it's called the alley fight. I said, well, what's an alley fight? He says, I don't know. I never had one before, but I'm going to have one with you two. He said, there'll be no rules. You can wear whatever you want to wear in the ring. No count outs. Match till there's a winner. And I said, okay. And he said, but there's one stipulation. Because of you guys always beating up the referee or somebody else, there won't be a referee at ringside. There'll only be a referee at ringside to count them 1, 2, 3, or ask one of you if they submit. And I said, okay, sounds good to me. So, of course, that night at Madison Square Garden, when I was about ready to go to the ring, I said to my manager, General Ernie Roth, the Grand Wizard, I said, Ernie, I got one question for you. He says, yeah, what is it, Sarge? I said, how does this match end? He said, what do you mean? I said, well, there's no referee. How does the match stop? He said, that's a good question. So he ran off and he came back. He said, don't worry about it. Just go out there and do all you can do to win. So I did. And of course, as soon as I got to the inside the ring, Pat attacked me, and we had probably one of the greatest, we did have the greatest match of all time in Madison Square Garden. Truly an epic battle, because there was no referee. As far as I know, there was never a match before that without a referee. And I don't think there's been a match since that match without a referee. And so we ended up battling. And the next thing I know, I'm getting back into the ring to continue the battle, and I see a towel being thrown in. I said, what? I was so infuriated. I was so mad that somebody threw the towel in, because I wanted to keep going. I didn't care. I wanted to keep fighting. Little did I know that when I did see the towel come in, that made Sergeant Slaughter the toughest SOB on the planet, because everybody saw that I didn't want to quit. Somebody threw the towel in for me. It wasn't me. It wasn't right. Sergeant Slaughter. So from that point on, I had a label that he was one tough son of a gun. And from that point on, it was easy street, because anybody I fought, they knew they were going to be in for a battle. But little did I know that match has become it's been around the world many times, especially for training camps that are teaching wrestlers how to be wrestlers. They show them that match. They say, if you want to be a professional wrestler, this is how you have a match. And here's two guys having a match without a referee. So if they can do that, you have to, you know, follow that path and do the best you can, because that's what you have to live up to. And of course, several trips over to Japan was always taken by young Japanese wrestlers, and my hand was shaking. My back was padded, and hugs for the greatest match that they had ever seen, and that they learned to wrestle by. So it was something we never expected. I never thought that it would ever turn out to be that. But Pat Patterson, from till the day he passed, every year he would watch that match and would call me and would just laugh and smile and say, that was the greatest match of all time. And nobody's ever going to be able to match that. And I don't think they have. We tried to come close with the boot camp match with the Iron Sheik, but I think Pat Patterson, especially some of the wrestlers that of today, like Mick Foley, that were actually in a fan at that match, it really makes you feel a pretty special when you're basically told that you had the greatest match of all time in Madison Square Garden history. So really looking forward to seeing if they added that match or anything to it in the biography or talked about it.
Yeah, totally unique match and so fun to watch that years after it happened too. He's someone that isn't talked about a lot in modern times. What can you tell me about working with the Grand Wizard, Ernie Roth?
He was a pure gentleman. And Ernie was the kind of manager that didn't get in your way. He never stepped in to speak for you unless he had to. And he knew that Sergeant Slaughter could speak on his own. And he was just pretty blessed and happy to be associated with me. But I made him the general, my general. And he was pretty proud of that. He always thanked me years and years later. And we always had a special friendship and a bond. And he was just a tremendous help, because he would come to me and point out a few things that were going on in a match, but never really got involved in a match, and was there when I needed him, and especially if he needed to grab the mic. And I usually let him start out saying his piece, and then I would finish it. And we were quite a team together.
That's great. And we're going to move on to something we call the three count now. It's going to be three quick questions and your answers. First question, what's the best match of yours that the fewest people saw? What's like a hidden gem in the Sergeant Slaughter body of work?
Well, one time we had a match in Alaska, and about 12 of us went over from Portland, Oregon, Don Owens Promotions. And we were flown over to Alaska and picked up and taken to a mountainside in RVs, four-wheel drives. And then from that point on, we went up a mountain on mules. And we got to the top of the mountain, and there was a makeshift ring up there. And it was made out of wood and some rope. And there was two tents, one for the heroes and one for the villains. And when it came to match time, I peeked out. I was wrestling Dutch Savage at that time. Wow. And I looked out, and there was like 10 men at ringside. And I said to the promoter, are we going to run? Are we going to still do the show? Are we waiting for more people? He said, no, it's sold out. And I said, well, should we wait for the rest to get here? He said, no, that's all that's coming. The government asked these gentlemen who are working up here on the lines what kind of entertainment they like to have, and they wanted to have a wrestling match. So we brought you guys up to have a wrestling match, and the ring was only like a foot off the ground. And so we had a wrestling match for these 10 gentlemen. And I thought it was one of my better matches. And unfortunately, only 10 and 11 other wrestlers and a referee saw it.
That's great. Second question. You're a big golfer, I understand. 18 holes with anyone in wrestling history. You get to play in a foursome. Who's playing with you?
Wrestlers?
Yeah, anyone in wrestling history, you get to play in a foursome. Who are the other three playing with you?
Oh, gosh. I guess, I don't know too many wrestlers that play golf, but I have played golf with vice presidents. I've played golf with many great celebrities. I guess one of my favorites was Charles Barkley, playing with Charles Barkley.
Nice.
And, of course, Lee Trevino was a partner of mine in a pro-am one time. And actually, at the end of the game, about the ninth or tenth hole, he handed me a putter out of his bag. He said, "Sarge, try this putter. You're bent over quite a bit. Try this putter." And I started making putt after putt after putt. And he was the happiest, most jubilant guy. He was laughing and screaming and telling people that what he had done. And at the end of the day, I went to give him the putter back. And he said, "No, you keep that. You keep that." And unfortunately, my bag got stolen one time. And that putter was in it. But I did have a lot of fun with Lee Trevino that day. And of course, I went to a lot of pro-ams and got to meet a lot of the pro golfers. And Roger Maltby was one of my favorite partners also. Because he liked to smoke cigars, and we had a great time.
Very good. And then the last question, what's the best part of being Sergeant Slaughter?
I guess the best part of being Sergeant Slaughter is that wherever I go, I'm always greeted and thanked for being Sergeant Slaughter. And the reason that the men and women that were in the military joined the military, they said that the Sarge influenced them that much that they wanted to serve their country and love their country that much that they wanted to serve their country. And I guess that's probably one of the greatest honors that I could ever bestowed upon. And I've been told that I'm the biggest recruiter for the military that they've ever had. So I salute all the men and women that have served our great country and continue to serve our great country and will continue to serve our great country.
Biography, Sergeant Slaughter, airs this Sunday at 9 p.m. on A&E. Sergeant Slaughter, thank you so much for your time today, and thank you for joining me in Under the Ring Pro Wrestling Conversations. I really enjoyed this.
Thank you so much, and no push-ups for you.
Thanks again, everyone, for joining me today on Under the Ring Pro Wrestling Conversations. I'd like to thank Sergeant Slaughter for joining me today. I'd like to thank A&E and Eric Winkler, as well as Paul Inserto, for setting this up with Sarge today. Follow me on Twitter at Under the Ring for all the latest guest announcements, and have a great week, everyone.
Just going to run this dog to see if we can find any type of human remains that are left.
Listen to Where Secrets Go to Die, The Disappearance of Derek Hennigan. From the Detroit Free Press, a new podcast set in the woods of Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Available on Apple, Spotify, Freep.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.